Dodgers. We're going to talk about Bobby Miller making his Dodger Stadium debut, Dino Ebel being mic'd up, and the parade of filthy relievers that the Dodgers rolled out in this last game of spring training. Spring training is over, so let's get locked on Dodgers.
You are Locked On Dodgers, your daily Los Angeles Dodgers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Dodger fans. This is Locked On Dodgers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every single weekday morning. Remember, this show is free and available on all podcast platforms and on YouTube simply by searching for Locked On Dodgers. Or if you subscribe wherever you're listening or watching, then you'll never miss a day, and you know we're never going to. If this is your first time listening or watching, my name is Jeff Snyder. That is my co-host, Vince Stamperio. And Vince and I are both lifelong Dodger fans, just like you are. We've also both spent time covering the Dodgers in the press box and the locker room. So we're not quite insiders, which is a good thing, but we bring you the smart fans' perspective on our boys in blue every weekday morning. So again, please go ahead and subscribe wherever you're watching or listening so you can make sure to make us your first listen every day. And let's talk about the Dodgers. First of all, just a couple little bit of news and notes. As you might remember, yesterday's episode was our National League West Roundtable, so we didn't get to talk about any actual news. And there were a couple little bits of news. One really sad bit of news: Tommy Davis passed away at the age of 83, I believe, over the weekend on Sunday or Monday, I think. And Dodger legend. He played 18 seasons in the big leagues. The first eight were with the Dodgers. His best two seasons came in 1962 and 63. He was an All-Star both years, finished top 10 in MVP voting both years. He led the major leagues in batting average both years. He was a very, very good hitter, played a long time, had a great career, and is another guy you could see around Dodger Stadium a lot over the years. And so sad to see Tommy Davis go. His first season was 1959, he got one plate appearance that year. His first real season was 1960. So he grew up in Brooklyn, but didn't ever get to play for the Brooklyn Dodgers, but did get to play for the Dodgers for the first 8 years of his career. Tommy Davis will be missed. So our thoughts and prayers go out to his family. Another Davis, some news. Joe Davis, the Dodgers broadcaster, play-by-play extraordinaire. The word came out, something we've talked about as a likelihood and a probability. And I guess it's still not official. It's not like Fox has announced this, but it's been reported by basically everybody who would know that Joe Davis will officially be taking over for Joe Buck as Fox Sports' top baseball guy, which means he will do the All-Star game and the postseason and the World Series. And so couldn't happen to a better guy, a better broadcaster. Joe Davis is outstanding at what he does, and a little more incentive for the Dodgers to get to the World Series, because the Dodgers haven't had their own broadcaster call their World Series since 1988. And so it would be fun to get there so that Joe Davis can call a Dodgers World Series.
Yeah, that's the best part of it. I know I posted it on my job on Twitter, and there's like reading the replies and quote tweets is funny because, you know, people know Joe Davis is the Dodgers guy, most people, and you know, if they don't like the Dodgers, and they automatically hate on Joe Davis. But I did see one person kind of say something like, oh, great, another, like, they keep adding Dodgers or something like that when Smoltz will be his other guy. And if you're a Braves fan, Smoltz, like, that's a Braves guy. So it's just funny. But, yeah, salute, you know, congrats to him. And as we talked about before, I don't think it'll interrupt too much in this season other than, you know, he'll for sure be out every Saturday. But, you know, definitely adds to, you know, as much as I love watching all the World Series highlights, you know, it would be nice to see something else other than back at the wall, gone, you know. Joe Davis makes it up a little bit.
Yeah, Joe Davis is one of the many reasons that I love him is that he doesn't have a set home run call. I've mentioned this before. I'm not a fan of set home run calls. I understand why people like them, but I don't. And so one of many things, I do think Joe Buck is a very good broadcaster. I like Joe Buck. I think, you know, anyway, that's a different topic. I've actually had that conversation with Joe Davis on this podcast about how national broadcasters, everybody thinks that they hate their team. And really it's just, you go through the season listening to the home team announcers. And so you get used to a broadcast that is favorable to your team. And so when you do come across an actual neutral broadcast, it feels like it's against your team because it is more against your team than you're used to. So that's all it is. And Joe Davis, he'll be the same way. And, you know, I talked to him last or in 2020, right before he called the Dodgers Padres NLDS and, you know, talked to him about the challenges of broadcasting, doing a national broadcast for the team that you cover on a daily basis. And so, yeah, go back, you know, you can find that October of 2020 in our podcast repository. We weren't on YouTube yet then, but it was a really interesting conversation that Joe and I had about calling in national games. So I would recommend you go back and find that if you are looking for something to listen to besides, you know, this episode. So on to stuff that actually happened on Tuesday. The Dodgers played their last spring training game, the Freeway Series finale. This game went much better than the first two games had gone. And, you know, not that spring training results matter, but it was nice to get a win coming out and a pretty dominant win. And the most exciting part, the part I want to talk about first, was Bobby Miller making his Dodger Stadium debut. He's going to start the season at Double A. All I can think is, man, I feel sorry for those Double A hitters.
Yeah, he came in. I mean, we've heard that he's been throwing 97, 102 all spring, but you know, I don't think he threw a fastball below 99 his entire three inning stint. You know, starts off the game striking out Ohtani looking on 100 mile an hour fastball. Family was in town, you know, so that was always a good thing. It was his 23rd birthday, you know, just a lot of things that kind of added up. But the fact that he looked good, and the fact that he looked good without having really any of his breaking stuff, and he said that after the game that, you know, he would have liked to have a better feel for some of his breaking stuff, but you know, he has a four seam, he has a two seam. He got Joe Adell looking on the two seam, 99 on the corner that ran back in. I mean, there was a lot to be excited for. And, you know, Dave Roberts before the game said, he thinks that we'll see him make his major league debut before the end of the year. And, you know, it's hard not to get excited, but when you see 102, you know, when you see a guy throwing that hard, even with just the two fastballs, he was able to get through three innings. Obviously, he would need to develop that breaking stuff or make sure it's working to get through a second time through a lineup, but it still was impressive.
Absolutely. And yeah, that two seamer that you're talking about, 99 miles an hour, 99.2, I think, 11 inches of drop and 13 inches of horizontal break. And I mean, that's almost Dustin May type pitching. And, you know, and, you know, I think it made a lot of people think about, you know, A, Walker Buehler, because that's always the comparison with Bobby Miller, and B, Dustin May. And you think about what this rotation could be as early as next year. Walker Buehler, Julio, Dustin May, Bobby Miller, and then, you know, whether it's Ryan Pepiot or Kershaw back, or, you know, Tony Gonsolin, who looked really good on Monday. You know, it's an embarrassment of riches. And yeah, you know, it made me, I was excited to see Bobby Miller pitch. I would have been excited to watch him pitch even if he had struggled, but to see him really, really do a lot of things well, watching his parents in the stands, that was emotional for me as a dad. You know, I mean, I get nervous watching my son pitch in his high school game. And I can't even imagine what it's like. Although, you know, I'd probably be less nervous if my son threw 100 miles an hour, you know, so maybe that helps you be less nervous as a parent. But I mean, Shohei Ohtani, the reigning MVP, is the first batter he faced in a major league stadium. And he struck him out looking, you know, and it was for his parents and for everybody, that's just awesome.
Yeah, and I think the thing, you know, the Buehler comparisons obviously happened right away, and, you know, he had the tight pants. I compared him to Buehler for that. But what you don't, or what maybe people didn't realize until last night, was he's a big dude. He's 6'2", was originally, I think he's up to 220, 239, so he put on some muscle. He, you know, you say Buehler and May. You know, Buehler's small and thin, skinny, although he has put on some muscle the last couple of years. Dustin May is tall and skinny. You know, this guy's just a solidly built dude. You can tell that, you know, he has a strong lower half, and, you know, that's going to help him for sure keep a little bit off his arm. And, you know, that's the reason he went from throwing 95, 96, 97 to, you know, now 99, 100 consistently for 55 pitches. And if he can continue that, you know, like you said, it's going to be an embarrassment of riches for the Dodgers rotation.
Yeah, you misspoke. You said 6'2". He's 6'5". He is a beast. Yeah, he's a. And speaking of beasts with with thick bottom sides. We're going to come back in a minute. We're going to talk about some of these relievers who came in after Bobby Miller, because it was, you know, you want to talk embarrassment and riches. Look at the six guys who pitched after Bobby Miller. That's what we're going to do when we come back in a second. We want to thank you again for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. And please keep it Locked On Dodgers. All right. Thank you for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. Go ahead and check out Locked On MLB Prospects. Host Lindsey Crosby is a prospect encyclopedia, and he's going deep on the MLB stars of tomorrow. It's free and available wherever you get podcasts. All right, Vince. So, you know, we talked about Bobby Miller, and that was exciting. Almost as exciting, and maybe in some ways even more exciting, was what happened after Bobby Miller for the Dodgers pitching, because you had six relievers come in and each throw an inning each. I mean, if nothing else, just excited that there were no mid-inning pitching changes. I could get used to that, you know. But what you had was Alex Vesia, Bruce Dar-Gratterall, Tommy Kahnle, Phil Bickford, Trinan, and Craig Kimbrell. I think that was the order. That was going off the top of my head. I'm pretty sure that's the order they came in. Mm-hmm. And you know, every one of those guys, we could spend a whole segment just on them. You know, Alex Vesia, we've talked, we were a little concerned about his spring hasn't been great. Well, he looked really good. He looked like he has figured some things out, and he has that fire. And, you know, we talked the other day about how he seems to be one of those emotional guys. And so maybe just being back at Dodger Stadium, being in a big league stadium, is different for Alex Vesia, but he looked really good.
Yeah, he looked good. You know, he still was mixing in some more off-speed than maybe we were used to from last year. But, you know, that's not a bad thing. And, you know, for him to get up there and do what he did. And, you know, everyone looked, like I said, no runs allowed. Obviously, that's a big part of it. The closest they got to scoring was when a runner reached third against Gratterall. And then Austin Barnes made a nice play on a ball that got by him, and they got the out at home. Tommy Kahnle threw one of those, as Dave Roberts called it, a Bugs Bunny changeup. He threw one to get the first strikeout. He threw another one that got the last out of that inning. And for somebody that we haven't really seen too much of, that was, you know, impressive. Obviously, he's still got it probably a few weeks away, but it's exciting. And the fact that all these guys are either going to start on the opening day roster or be on the roster by the end of the month or past the end of the month once we get into the 26-man roster is just ridiculous, you know. Craig Kimbrough recovered from his really bad first outing. You know, he threw in the ninth inning, wasn't a save opportunity, but, you know, home crowd, different feeling, you know, landed a couple off-speed pitches that he didn't quite have the last time. Like, Trinan's always going to be nasty, but yeah, it was impressive and just, you know, shows, even if it wasn't, you know, that after some point, the Angels' main starters were out, but realistically, these guys are still, you still got to throw strikes, you still got to get outs. And that was the most important part, is these guys were throwing strikes. Everybody that came in was, I think Kahnle was at 10 pitches, 10 strikes to start his inning. There's a few other guys that, you know, I don't think there was any walks allowed. So that's the most important part for me when I'm watching games, is if relievers don't give out walks, for the most part, they're going to have a decent time.
Yeah, absolutely. The one time you mentioned that they almost scored off Gratterall, that guy was only on base because he had a weak ground ball at the middle that Gratterall unwisely tried to field and deflected it into an infield single. It would have been a routine ground out to Trey Turner if Gratterall doesn't, you know, Gratterall actually, I think he led the major leagues last year in comebacker groundouts. And so I know he had the highest comebacker percentage. And so, you know, maybe he just wanted to pad those numbers, wanted to make that play, but you know, so that guy shouldn't have been on base anyway. And then they tackled that. Kahnle's changeup was really fun to watch. When he was on this show last year, he and I talked about using the changeup, you know, traditionally, or a lot of guys mostly will use their changeup against opposite handed hitters. And so, you know, a right-handed pitcher would use the changeup to left-handed hitters. And one of the things that Tommy Kahnle and I talked about was using that pitch as a weapon against right-handed hitters too. And so you mentioned he got the strikeout against Taylor. What's his name? The guy who came from the Yankees, Wade. The lefty got the strikeout with the changeup. But then he threw the one that he finally got the ground out from Matt Duffy was the fifth two-strike changeup he threw to him in that at-bat. And you could tell he was really working. He wanted to finish that at-bat off with the changeup. And so that was fun to see. He looked really good. Well, the one you didn't even mention is Phil Bickford. You know, we haven't seen Bickford at all yet this spring. And he came in, he looked good. You know, he doesn't actually throw extremely hard for a reliever. He didn't last year when he was really good, but he's throwing 93, but he's got, I don't know if it's a spin rate thing or a deception thing or whatever, but it seems like his 93 plays up a little bit, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, this is something we talked about last year, trying to figure it out. And I think, I mean, he's 6'4". I would imagine he steps a little bit, you know, his, what's it called? His
extension.
Yeah. It's probably a little bit more than 6'4". You know, Tim Lincecum was very small, but extended like a guy that was 6'4", maybe big for 6'4" and extends like a guy that's 6'7". And that's why it jumps on you faster, because we really couldn't figure it out last year. Now, and I mean, for a while we thought maybe it was a little bit of fool's gold just early on. And then he became that guy into late in the season, into the postseason. And so far this in the spring, so far, he's shown the same thing. So yeah, he must get on you quick. And the ball probably seems like it's coming at you from like 15 feet away rather than 60 feet away.
Yeah, he's almost the opposite of Bruzar Gratterall in that way. Gratterall, who does throw 102, but he doesn't get much extension. He kind of doesn't step very deep. And so it probably feels more like 98. But, you know, but Gratterall, I was pleased to see him mixing in. You know, we saw him throw a cutter. The first pitch he threw was only 96, but it was a cutter, you know, and it seemed like a pretty decent cutter. And cutters are always hard, especially, you know, we were talking yesterday about how it's hard to see the movement on Kershaw's slider sometimes because of the camera angle. I feel like a right-hander's cutter might be kind of the same way. You know, Kenley Jansen, we always had that same thing where sometimes the only way you know that his cutter's moving is because the hitters can't touch it, you know? And so I feel like we're going to see some of that with Gratterall too. He mixed in a I don't know if it's a curve or a slider. It's hard to tell when they throw that hard, but you know, yeah, I mean, seeing Gratterall mixing in other pitches, I think that's going to be key for him since his fastball doesn't play like most 102 mile an hour fastballs does, you know, but if he can have two other off speed pitches that hitters have to be ready for, well, that's going to help his fastball play up too.
Yeah. And I think the other thing with this bullpen that we haven't really touched on is other than Blake Treinen, almost everyone else has something to prove or is out there, you know, with some kind of chip on their shoulder. You know, Kimbrough struggled in the second half last year, struggled 2020 and 2019. You know, he wants to, you know, prove that he's still that guy. He's close to 400 saves, so, you know, he wants to get out there and get every save he can this year. You know, Gratterall, Vesia, Bickford, Vesia are, you know, trying to prove that they are legit MLB relievers, not just, you know, flash in the pan 1 year type of things. You know, Gratterall started last year and Gratterall didn't become a guy for the Dodgers last year until late September and then into October. You know, he wants to prove that. You got Tommy Kahnle, Caleb Ferguson coming off injuries. Obviously, they have something to prove. And then every other guy that comes after that, you know, even when they get down to Victor Gonzalez, whenever, you know, he ends up on the major league roster, he has something to prove because he had a bad year last year. So, you know, every player can find a chip to put on their shoulder, but these guys have, you know, legitimate things to play for and fight for. And, they're putting in the work. And I think that's what's going to help out this bullpen. And we've seen it before with good bullpens. They feed off each other. One guy comes in and shuts down an inning. The next guy wants to do the same. The next guy wants to do the same. And it's kind of like starting pitchers feed off each other. You know, when Kershaw Greinke used to go back and forth of, oh, I just threw 6 shutout innings. Why I just threw 7 shutout innings? And then, you know, they would go back and forth like that. I think the bullpen can fit that bill as well.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a part of me that has the instinct of, okay, don't get too excited about this because the Dodgers rolled out their A team of relievers, you know? Well, the fact that they have 6 guys on their A team in the bullpen, it's ridiculous, you know? And like you said, that doesn't include Victor Gonzalez, who didn't pitch today. Evan Phillips showed signs last year of being pretty good. I'm just looking at who else they have in the bullpen. Daniel Hudson has been a World Series closer in the last couple of years. And then Victor Gonzalez, you know, they'll get Caleb Ferguson at some point. Justin Brule has looked good at times, you know? And so, I mean, this bullpen could be really, really good. And guys are going to have off days. Today was kind of the exception. You're not going to have 6 guys every day who don't have an off day, but you don't need 6 guys most days. Most of the time, especially with what the Dodgers have at the top of their rotation, you can expect 5 or 6 innings from your starter. So you only need 3 or 4 guys at the end. And, you know, I mean, you could get by with these 6 relievers if you knew you were going to get 6 innings every day from your starter. And so to have these 6 guys plus the supporting cast, it's exciting. That's the bottom line.
Yeah. I think the big part with this team right now is, if there was a question mark, it's the starting rotation. We've talked about the bullpen all spring and all offseason of how strong it is. But I think this is a year where, we've seen them do it in 2020 and in postseason last year as well, of a pitching staff. And I think at least early on, this is going to be a pitching staff. It'll be Walker and Julio and probably Kershaw going 5-6 early on. But after that, it's going to be, everyone else kind of chipping in and filling in. And to have that many arms, as we saw last year, you need as many arms as possible because of injuries and because you don't want guys to get burnt out.
Yeah, absolutely. So exciting times for the Dodger bullpen, and it was fun to watch all of that on display on Tuesday night for their last spring training game. Great game. And we're going to come back in a minute. We're going to talk about the other highlight of the game, which is kind of a new tradition the last couple of years with the Dodgers and something I absolutely love. Dino Ebel was mic'd up and actually a two-way conversation with Joe Davis and Eric Karras in the broadcast booth for the entire game. Every time the Dodgers were up, all nine or all eight times, Dino Ebel was mic'd up, and it was awesome. We're going to talk about that when we come back. So please keep it locked on Dodgers. I want to talk to you about Built Bar. You know how I feel about Built Bar if you've ever watched or listened to this show before. I love Built Bar. They are delicious and they are healthy, and that's not a combination you get very often. And I don't just mean healthy, like not bad for you. Built Bars are actively good for you. They are all low calorie, low carb, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. And did I mention delicious? Because they're delicious. Whatever flavor you like, you're going to find something you like. They're all covered in chocolate. They also have these Built Puffs that are also basically like marshmallows covered in chocolate. They're somehow good for you. I don't understand how it works, but Built Bar does, and that's all that really matters because they're really good at it. So if you know what flavor you like, go order a box or two of them. If you don't know what flavor you like, order a mix box. They'll send you a couple of like nine different flavors, and you can see what you like, and then you'll know what to order the next time. But whatever you order, go to Built.com, use promo code LOCKED15, and you will get 15% off your order. And that's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at Built.com. All right, thank you again for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. For your second listen, go ahead and check out Locked On MLB, where Paul Francis Sullivan, please call him Sully, brings you his unique perspective on the major leagues past and present. It's free and available wherever you get podcasts. All right, Vince, so in this game on Tuesday, kind of a fitting way. I think the last couple of years they've done this earlier in spring training. It was in Arizona, I think. And maybe this is just because Joe Davis didn't do many of the games in Arizona. But with Joe Davis and Eric Karras in the broadcast booth, they had Dino Ebel, the Dodgers third base coach, mic'd up, two-way mic conversation for the whole game. And it's my favorite thing, Vince. I'm not joking when I say I would love to have this every single game.
Yeah, I mean, obviously Dino Ebel helps make it because he's such a good personality. I don't know if every third base coach can do this, and I know I know for sure probably every third base coach can do this, but he makes it fun. I think, last year, from what I remember, it wasn't as much back and forth. Joe Davis, I think, wasn't quite sure, and he would just ask questions here periodically. Oral or whoever was there chimed in, but I think Eric Karras wanted to ask so many questions. He would ask in the middle of a guy's swing, like he was trying to ask questions as things were happening, which was kind of funny. But yeah, I mean, obviously, as someone who loves baseball, like both of us do, it's something that's intriguing. Obviously, something that both of us have coached before. Both of us have probably coached third before, obviously in a much different level. But it's something where you get insight, and he mentions, and he talked about his background, and he learned from Joe Molfitano, who was around, in the Tommy Lasorda days and in the World Series days, and a guy that he learned from, and kind of told us his backstory, and he was with the Dodgers, and became a player coach, and all kind of stuff, and kind of figured out that coaching was going to be his path, and you can tell he really loves baseball, and you can tell it's just a conversation between three guys that love baseball. And, it's kind of like our conversation every day. We don't mind talking to each other for 30, 45 minutes every day. And they didn't mind talking to each other for, a full eight innings on offense. So it's a good thing. Obviously, we can't get in regular season. I would, maybe if the Dodgers can wrap up in early September, maybe they can tell you, hey, man, it's already, you guys already got it wrapped up. Let's have you on again. But definitely looking forward to whenever it does happen again.
Yeah, absolutely. And, Karras and Dino played in the minor leagues together, kind of came up together. So they've known each other a long time. So I think that helped. You know, they have that existing relationship. Obviously, Hershiser and Davis know Dino too, but, you know, Karros has known him longer. And so I think that helped. And one of my favorite things is that you can tell listening to Dino Ebel talk that he knows how to teach baseball, you know, and I think that appealed to the coach and both of us that, you know, like I had my sons, they were there in the room for me. I'm like, you know, okay, you know, they were playing this baseball game. They play in our living room. It's ridiculous. And, you know, any good parent wouldn't allow it, but you know, they were playing this, but when the Dodgers came up, I said, okay, sit and watch this with me for a little while, because Dino talking about, you know, just all the things that he's thinking about that teaches a kid who's learning baseball. Oh, wow. There's so much going on the field. And, you know, I remember a couple of years ago when they were starting to put the extended netting in all the stadiums, and somebody on Twitter said, oh, because you're too lazy to not responsible enough to watch the game, I have to have my view obstructed or whatever. And I made the point on Twitter then, like, if you think that watching a baseball game means staring at the baseball the whole time, you're not a baseball fan. You don't actually love baseball, because there's so much going on in a baseball field. And that's the thing that I get the most from these conversations with Dino Ebel. You know, he's watching the shift, you know, he's making sure the runners are aware of the shift, and he's, you know, looking at, with two outs and I forget who it was coming up, but he saw that the outfielders all shifted a little bit to the opposite field side, and all these things that are going on every pitch. And when you're watching a game on TV, you really mostly only see the pitcher and the hitter, you know? And so to get that insight, one of the reasons that I love being at Dodger Stadium is because I can watch, you know, like we saw a couple plays on Tuesday, fly balls that I thought, crap, the gapper. And then Cody Bellinger made the play standing up. You know, one of my favorite things to do at a game is watch Cody Bellinger. What's he doing as the pitch is coming in? You know, what's he doing? Where's he playing? How does he get these jumps? Obviously, his freakish speed and crazy long legs are a big part of his defense, but he's also a really good defender at, you know, getting jumps and anticipating where the ball's going to be hit and all those things. I love watching that stuff from the stadium, and you don't get to do that on TV, but we got a little bit of a glimpse of that just from one standpoint. Here's what Dino Ebel does. I would love it if we had Clayton McCullough mic'd up when you, okay, what are you doing here? You know, okay, when you walked over there while Dino's getting the signs, are you actually whispering something in Freddie Freeman's ear, or is it just, you know, what are you doing and what are you watching in between? What are you doing when, you know, when Trey Turner hits that gapper that scored Mookie and Freeman, what's McCullough doing there? You know, I'd love to have that. I'd love to get all these insights from all the, I'd love if you could have, you know, the catcher mic'd up and asking him questions. You can't, and I understand why you can't, but this Dino Ebel thing gives us just a little bit of a glimpse and can really, I think it's great for kids to just kind of learn, wow, there's so much going on a baseball field. And I think that's the sort of thing, and maybe it's only nerdy kids like me, but that's the kind of thing that can make kids fall in love with baseball when you realize there's so much more going on than what you see on TV.
Yeah, I definitely think it's a niche of, if you like baseball enough, then this gets you even more excited about baseball, because like you said, there is so much going on and you don't really think about it. And the other part that, you know, Dino didn't mention, but I'm sure he has in his mind, which I would have liked him have talked about, what is, you know, you know who has the arm out there and who doesn't. So, you know, when they're asking these questions, there's some point where, yeah, you're checking positioning, but, you know, realistically, he's thinking, okay, left fielder, if he's in a normal position, ball's hit to left field, he doesn't have an arm, I'm sending him almost, you know, 90% of the time, whatever the case is. So there's a lot to go on. You know, we see these mic'd up moments do so well for baseball in general, you know, in MLB, you know, I say that my job, you know, anytime we post a mic'd up moment, you know, whatever it is, obviously it's the cream of the crop of the mic'd up moments, but people want that insight. People want that, you know, exclusivity. They want to see what's going on. It's hard to do it when the games matter, which is why spring training happens, which is why the All-Star game happens. But, you know, I think of like a team like the Savannah Bananas, who are a little bit, maybe a bit over the top at this point, but so a team like that, or a league like that, that can, you know, provide this type of insight, even if not at a major league level, would really hit because of stuff like this. And you know, you can see it on TikTok and Instagram and stuff like that. There's a lot more like high school teams or even college teams, lower level or summer league teams, like doing mic'd up type of content. Most of it is more humor, but if you actually got some of the, you know, like the nerdy stuff, that would also play very well because people want to know and people want to, you know, you don't realize, yeah, baseball, people think it's easy. People think it's, you know, blah, 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 all this other stuff. It's a big man. It's a big time thinking game. It's a big time physical, not physical, like in terms of, you know, brute strength and everything else, but in terms of being, you know, physical athlete, more than just muscle.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think Dino Ebel is unique to this, you know, or at least somewhat unique. I don't think every third base coach would be this interesting. And I think, you know, the times we have had players mic'd up, I don't think it's that interesting a lot of the time because, you know, Dino Ebel is a teacher of baseball. And so that's part of what made it so great for me. You know, yeah, it's a perfect storm.
It's for the humorous side when they get the players on. We're not getting any insight, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. All right. I think that's going to do it for today. This was, you know, it was a fun game to end spring training on. Spring training is now officially over. Like we talked about the other day, we were barely even tired of it before it ended. So that's, you know, hopefully baseball will learn something from that. I don't know if it means having a 28-man roster for the first 3 weeks every year, maybe it's not worth having the shortened spring training, but whatever it is, spring training is done. Dodgers regular season starts on Friday. We'll have two more episodes before then about a few other things looking forward. We'll get the final word on the Dodgers opening day roster at some point. Probably we'll talk more about that. We'll talk about what to expect going into the season. We're really excited for it and we're excited to share that with you guys. I want to thank you again for making Locked On Dodgers your first listen every day. It means the world to us. If you aren't listening or watching every day, please add 1 or 2 days a month to your rotation. If you have friends or family who love the Dodgers as much as you do, please tell them about the show. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Locked On Dodgers. Vince is on Twitter at Vince Samperio. I am on Twitter at Snydog, and the DMs are open in all of those places. You can also reach out to us via email at lockedondodgers@gmail.com, or you can leave us a voicemail or shoot us a text anytime at 323-863-LOCK-5625. We are here every weekday morning, and we hope you'll be here with us. When you get in your car or sit on your couch, tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Dodgers. And remember, you don't have to agree. You just have to listen. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Have a good one.